This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for a simple payment solution, check out Braintree. Go to braintreepayments.com/whatthetech for more information. What the Tech? Hey, buddy, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian, and of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. You know what? Somebody offered me money to give you a new nickname, and it is Paul the Excellence of Execution Theroux. We're at the meetup. Guy goes, I'll give you $5 if you call him the Excellence of Execution. So there you are. How does it feel, Paul? How does it feel?
I don't know what that means.
The Excellence of Execution. I don't know. I imagine you just impale people, and that's it. That's how you execute them. Happy days, Paul. Happy Microsoft week to you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it was kind of a big week, and obviously I just got out of the shower, but I'm glad it's over.
Oh man, we have so much to talk about. You know, we do show notes here. It doesn't look like it, but we do, and there are weeks sometimes. Sometimes
I mean, we didn't do that. Oh, not this week, though.
Right? No, what are we, nuts? It's a waste of time. We know what we're talking about. When it's busy like this,
Andrew.
Yeah, when it's busy like this, we don't need to do any kind of show notes because we kind of know exactly where we're going to go with this and what we're going to talk about. So there's so much to talk about. Paul's trip to
there
New
is,
York.
But you know what? Actually, if you don't mind me interrupting,
go ahead.
Because that's what I do.
You go ahead.
Before we get started, we should say thank you to you and to Chris for helping us out yesterday. You helped out Mary Jo and I find a place in New York so we could record Windows Weekly. And I don't think people who watch or listen to this understand what a good guy you are, maybe, you know, off camera. And, you know, you're always very helpful and great. But yesterday was particularly good. I just wanted to say thank you again.
Well, thank you for that. I try to be a decent human being. I may not come off
on the air. No, you really are.
No, it was a lot of fun. I had a great time.
I'm saying this for the benefit of... I feel uncomfortable being nice to you, but
you do. Why?
People need to know. I mean, you've been really, really great.
Is it the I want to punch him in the face look that I have? Is that what it is?
Right. It's just a natural uneasiness around magicians.
So people that want to see our setup, this was the studio space that we had yesterday. I'm sorry if you're listening to the podcast, but you and Mary Jo, we were. I want to thank CBS and Chris Tobin for. Getting this for us. And this was our setup here, and this is how you recorded Windows Weekly on a MacBook Pro from 2011, which is amazing if you think about it. But this was the exact studio. This was the control room.
Try not to think about that part of it.
Yeah. It was the control room for CBS Local and CBS National. So they were gracious enough to give us the space, and I mean, they didn't even bat an eye. They're like, do whatever you want. Press whatever buttons. Don't worry about it. What do you need? Do you need mics? Do you need whatever? It was so nice. I should take advantage of that, actually. I should use that space a little bit more. But now whenever you're in New York, Paul, you could record a podcast there.
Yeah, that was pretty incredible.
So it worked out. I do want to talk about that a little bit later. There's so much to talk about. The whole trip, it was so much fun. For 2 days, I spent it with Paul and Mary Jo. We hung out in the city. I met so many great people at the meetup, which we'll bring up maybe on the post show if we have enough time, or maybe on the show, but most definitely on the post show. We run out of time. But before we do that, guys, I want to take a short little break and talk about our sponsor, and that's Braintree. You want to talk about people that you're thankful for. I'm thankful for Braintree. Not because they're an advertiser, but because I've gotten so many emails from viewers telling me that they've implemented this. A lot of our viewers are developers, they're business owners, they're creating a mobile app. One of my friends, I'm not going to name who he is because I named him once before. He's like, I don't want people to know, you know, what we're planning on doing, but he has a major clothing company here in New York. And they were looking at a way to take online payments. And currently, they were going through probably like 4 different services. They were using PayPal, which Braintree is a PayPal company, but they were using PayPal. They were using a shopping cart website. They were using one of those. And then they were doing another weird payment method. He was actually doing credit card transactions locally. That's what it was. And he heard me talk about Braintree on the show here, on the GFK network. And he called me and he told me, he's like, listen, what do you know about these guys? I'm like, they're great. That's what everybody tells me. They're phenomenal. You know, your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free, so you don't pay anything. If you sign up with, you know, our link, BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. And he incorporated this. You know, I told him the whole shtick. I told him how Uber's doing it, Airbnb's doing it, Hotel Tonight, Living Social. These are major, major companies out there, and you know you could trust these guys. Some of the selling points, obviously, it's the fact that you could take PayPal and Apple Pay and Bitcoin and all these different payment methods. But the thing that really sold this guy on the service is the fact that it's on a token system. So pretty much the merchant never receives your credit card information. They receive, you know, the transactions go through, so there won't be compromises on that end. We see this happening more and more and more where credit card information, personal information is all being compromised. You know, these companies are getting hacked and all this information is going away. You don't have to worry about that if you're implementing Braintree in your payment solution. Phenomenal service. The PayPal company, great guys over there. And, you know, that's a true story on my behalf. And I think those are a little bit better than me sitting here and telling you how great they are every week, which they are. But it's stories like this that you should be listening to when you're looking to sign up for a service, especially when it's something like this, when you're charging money, you know, you're making money with this. Your first $50,000 in transactions are fee-free, which is tremendous. Go to BraintreePayments.com/whatthetech. Tell them we sent you, and I want to thank them because, you know, they've been a big sponsor here at the GFK Network. So thank you, Braintree, for supporting the show and for supporting What the Tech. You know what someone said to me? Apparently, it's a Queens thing to say tremendous, and Donald Trump says it all the time.
Tremendous?
Yeah, he's like, oh, it's tremendous. Tremendous. Oh, tremendous. Everything is tremendous to him. I didn't know it was an actual Queens thing, and I asked him, like, oh, yeah, we use tremendous, and we use interesting all the time. Donald Trump. Guys,
interesting.
This is who I will be when I grow up. It will be Donald Trump because I say tremendous. I was told that at the meetup a couple days ago. So, Paul, you were in New York for the last 2 days. A lot's happening. I guess we should start with the Surface Pro 4.
Okay.
To me, the biggest part of that announcement was the really good keyboard that they announced, or the much better keyboard that they announced.
Yep.
And this has been a complaint for many, many Surface owners that really want to use this as a productive platform to type and send emails and things like that.
Actually,
yes.
Let me show you something.
Yes, go ahead.
Before I went to New York, my intention was to bring the Surface Pro 3 with me.
Okay. Right?
But the problem I have with it was a couple problems. One's the screen's a little too small for me. Although, I realize most people are probably fine with that. But the other thing is the keyboard. I don't like the keyboard, which is what you're talking about. So I have this... let's see how I can do this, sorry, on camera. So, you know, I have a Surface Pro 3, right? And then I have this, Bluetooth keyboard, right?
Yeah.
And so on Sunday or Monday or whenever it was before the show, I actually spent time configuring these things together. I mean, the Surface Pro 3 is already up to date. Otherwise, it's got all my data and stuff on it and applications.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm going to travel with this. I'm going to see what this was like. I had to kind of look up, you know, what would it be? You know, what's the point of this keyboard? Like, you know, you must be able to turn it off somehow. I don't want it, you know, engaging.
Hold it up. Can I see it again?
Yeah.
Just hold it up. That's exactly the keyboard.
Yeah. It's basically a ThinkPad laptop type keyboard. It's wonderful. You know, it's much better than the Surface keyboard, obviously. It doesn't connect to it, of course. I mean, it's not, you know.
You know what would be great with that? If there was some sort of, like, mounting bracket, you could, like,
hook it in. Well, the thing is, remember, the Surface Pro 3 has a kickstand, so it's okay. I mean, it would work together. It's just, you know, slightly more awkward to travel with. But I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to do this. And actually, the reason I didn't bring it was I couldn't find the power adapter for the Surface Pro 3. I have it in a dock, and I have the dock powered, but I didn't have the – I don't know. I mean, I have it somewhere. I just don't know where it is. So I ended up not bringing it. But, you know, it's interesting because, to me, this was always the ideal, the ThinkPad portable keyboard. And I, to this day, still wonder why they don't offer this kind of keyboard as an option, at the very least, for Surface Pro. But as you were saying, I mean, I'll have to spend some time with it, but maybe that new type cover that they just came out with, you know, could solve that problem. And for me, it would be one of the last few remaining issues I have with Surface.
So, and this is something we've discussed, I think, the last time when we went out to dinner. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how the keyboard, it's for business. I mean, a lot of business professionals use this. It's not just the common person buying a Surface Pro.
The common person?
The common person. Well, I mean, like, it's not, you're not spending, you know, the $1,500, $1,600 or more if you're just looking to get a laptop.
Well, you know what, though? So here's the thing. This is something I kind of need to remind myself about because I write and I spend all day long on a keyboard, and keyboards are very important to me. Most people are not me, and they don't have my needs, you know? And the truth is, you know, most, you know, you're talking about people who need or want a laptop or whatever. I think the majority of those people don't necessarily need a certain level of keyboard or need it to be as good as I might want it to be.
Yeah,
right?
No, exactly. That, yeah, that, and
you know,
that's
the
my
PCs,
point. Yeah.
I think, in some ways, are optimized for something that is not necessarily the mainstream. You know, I mean, when you think about like what Microsoft's doing with Continuum and Windows phones and this notion that you can get a lot of stuff done on this phone, but every once in a while you want to plug it into a dock and get on a keyboard and type because you've got a certain amount of text to type or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I do actually think that's the exception.
Okay.
Right?
So,
not the rule needing that kind of capability. So, you know, maybe the thing we're complaining about here is not
I have a whole theory about Continuum and what their point with that is. But with the keyboard, I feel like when they announced the Surface Pro 3, we're targeting business professionals.
Yeah.
A lot
of
that.
Absolutely.
And if you are typing, like, let's say you're a writer.
Mm-hmm.
You're typing away on this thing. It's not the greatest experience to type away on a Surface keyboard. And that baffled
that
me that...
It's okay, right? I mean,
you know,
it works.
At first, you know what I had envisioned when they announced the original Surface? I said, oh, okay. They're going to have this crappy one, and then they're going to have the one that's a little bit better, and they're going to have a wide array of keyboards that Microsoft is going to put out, maybe three or four of them, and they go up in quality, and they go up in price. So you know what? If you are Paul Theron, you need to type away. Maybe you could attach this thing to a keyboard like the one that you just showed, you know, the Lenovo keyboard.
By the way, they talked – this is a couple of generations ago, I guess, but they were talking at one time about – these blades, you
the
know,
blades,
and that,
yeah.
This notion that third parties are going to come along and make, you know, maybe, well, adapt, you know, different, I don't know what to call them, peripherals of some kinds. But I was thinking of, you know, keyboard makers, the Logitechs of the world or whoever would come out and, you know, make a Surface like hardware keyboard. And I would have seriously considered getting something like that just to have the improved experience. It's funny. I'm looking at the photo of the new type cover online, and when you compare it with like this is the Surface Pro 3 version of the type cover, you can see the differences. Like in the elevation of the keys, like you can see that they're separated. They take up more space. Like there's kind of, you know, we talk a lot about bezels on screens a lot.
Yeah,
I've always wondered, they've got this space on either side of this. Why? Why not? Why wouldn't the keyboard take up that entire space? And it could be full size. Like this thing isn't quite full size. The version for Surface Pro 4 is not quite as wide as the whole thing, but it takes up about half of that space now.
Do you have that on your website? I'm trying to find a photo of it.
Just go to surface.com and click on Surface Pro 4 and scroll down. There's some really good pictures of it.
All right.
You know the additional width of the keyboard and the size of the keys and the spacing of the keys, which I think is also important, makes it more like a real keyboard, allows them to put additional keys in. You can see that there's a function key now on the left side of the space bar, which there wasn't before. The trackpad, of course, is bigger, and now it's glass instead of whatever this probably – it's probably plastic or whatever.
I want to see the material
used in Surface Pro 3. And, of course, the function row is – you know, like a standard keyboard now. It's not the weird Windows 8, you know, charms and stuff that was so out of date today.
You know what's weird? They're showing the stupid blue one. I don't want the blue one. I want to see, like, the big boy one with the fingerprint reader.
Well, so the fingerprint reader is only available. They're not going to show that on the Surface Pro 4 page because you don't need it. And that's not what you would get. That one's for Surface Pro 3.
No, it's
because
Surface Pro 3 doesn't
have a Windows Hello camera.
It's a Surface Pro 4 accessories, and it shows this.
Shows what?
The keyboard under Surface Pro 4.
No, I mean, you don't. I'm sorry. You can, of course, get it.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is you don't need to. This one's more expensive. Surface Pro 4 already comes with a Windows Hello camera.
Okay.
A fingerprint ID reader would be slower. You wouldn't need it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like this thing, that thing is going to be more expensive. In fact, why don't you click on it? Because I don't know how much it is.
I did.
It's $129 for the normal one. How much is the one with the fingerprint reader?
I want to see it in black. Okay, there we go. That makes me so much better. let's see. It just says learn more. Let's see. Pre-order.
No. Yeah, there you go.
$159.
Yeah. So, okay. That's what I did. They're $30 more. So, you know, if you have a Surface Pro 3 and you intend to keep using it for a couple of more years, that would be a great little thing, an addition, you know, that would kind of extend the usefulness of it. Much better keyboard from what I can tell, you know, again, just a short amount of time using it.
Yeah.
The show. And then that fingerprint reader, which is awesome for Windows 10.
Yeah. I mean, that's really awesome. I was really impressed by it. The price point, you know what? For the longest time, I thought it was expensive, but the fact that you could get the Core M, what is it, the M3?
Yeah, by the way, I have a theory about this.
Okay, go ahead.
I've been reading up on the Intel stuff. All and
right. You got the scoop.
Yeah, I think I know why they're using an M3 instead of an i3 in the base model. These things are called Surface Pro, right? They're not Surface. It's Surface Pro.
Yeah.
Surface Pro means you're going to get Windows 10 Pro.
And that'd be a cruel joke.
And one of the
joke.
Features that's in Windows 10 Pro is Hyper-V, the virtualization solution.
Yeah.
The i3 chip does not support all of the processor features needed for Hyper-V.
Mm-hmm.
But the M3 does. And M5, M7 do. So... I think a lot of people thought they went to M for that one model to do a fanless design. I actually think the real reason they did it was so that every model of the Pro device did support Hyper-V. And if you look at the Surface Book, there is no M3 i3 version. It's only i5 i7, and all i5 and i7 chips, of course, support all of the virtualization functionality.
Yeah.
So I think that's the real reason they did M3 on the base model.
Yeah, on the Surface Pro. Yeah.
On the Surface 3, that's on Surface Pro 3, that's not the case.
Listen, for $899, what is it? $799,
$899?
$899. I mean, that's not bad at all. Considering what you're getting, and you're getting, you know, this hybrid type
Microsoft, you know, I made the observation, and they used the term, you know, they used the word a couple times. They very clearly made a move toward the premium part of the market. You know, these devices are not competing with the $300-$400 machines.
Yeah.
And so for the volume part of the market, the HP, Lenovo, Dell part of the market, that's theirs. Microsoft's not going to be there. And I think that's one of those ways that they can kind of cooperate and compete
OEMs,
at the same
yeah.
time, right? Because they're not really taking anything away from anybody.
Yeah, they're saying, well, listen, how many of those, you know, mega Dells are you selling? You know, the Dell MacBook clones. Probably it's a fraction of whatever their sales are in the PC world. It's a very small percentage of people are actually spending $2,000 on a PC. Majority of people are spending, you know, $300, $400, $500, $600, $700. Microsoft has priced them out of that, you know, market with a premium device. I like the Surface announcement. Now, the big story here is the Surface Book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an interesting device because A, it is, you know, the screen comes off. It has two chipsets. It has two GPUs on some models.
Optionally.
On some models.
Not all versions of it do, but it can. Yeah, it can.
Touch screen. This thing is expensive. It's not cheap at all. I think the highest end is
$2,700
for the highest end, you know, which is...
$1,499 to start is... $600 more than a Surface. Well, actually, that's not fair because you need a keyboard. So assuming you get a type cover, you know, it's probably $450 more.
How much is the starting MacBook Pro for a Retina display? Let's find out. 13-inch by, let's click on buy.
With a Retina, it's probably in that same.
Yeah, I'm curious if it's $1,400. Starting is $1,200. $1,299. i5, 8 gigs of RAM, 128 storage. So if we went with, you know what? It's exactly the same price. i5, 8 gigs, 256 is $1,500. It is exactly the same.
Interesting.
You add an i7, and you know what? If you add the i7 and 16 gigs, you're at $2,000. So the MacBook is about $100 to $200 more on the higher end.
Smaller screen.
Small screen.
Doesn't support touch. Doesn't support a pen. The screen doesn't come off. I mean, it's, you know, so it's not, they're not in many ways even comparable,
yeah.
You know, other than pure performance, I guess.
Yeah. You know, horsepower-wise, I guess they're compatible. So how do you think this is going to sell? I mean, the reports are that this was, that the pre-orders were sky high. I mean, they were very happy with what they saw with the pre-orders.
Yeah, no, Microsoft told me that the pre-orders for this device on day one were higher than any Surface they had already previously sold. And it obviously, when they told me that, the day wasn't even over, so.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard mixed reviews. Some people say that it's a very pretty device. Other people say that it's hideous. The Surface Book.
So this is what I'm going to say about it. When I saw it in the video and when I saw them talking about it on stage, I thought it was weird looking. And
it's grown on you.
I didn't think the design was particularly interesting. Going hands-on with it and spending some time with it, actually, it's a beautiful laptop. It's a really nice machine.
Okay, so here's a good question. When they were demoing it, right? When they were showing the first video, not the second video?
Yep.
Right? Did you guys see a webcam on the back? Did they show that?
A webcam?
Yeah, it has a camera on the back.
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
I'm trying to remember because when I saw the video, I didn't initially see that. I'm wondering if they like left it in there and that's what they were telling you to look at.
So, you know, I had been tipped off about this machine ahead of time and I didn't know the source. And so I didn't want to write a post about it. And I didn't have any independent verification. So I kind of tweeted about it and I talked about the GPU and the base, 14-inch screen and, you know, whatever else. I can't remember what else I said. I think I said all the ports were in the base, whatever. And I had more information than I just tweeted 140 characters worth and left it at that, you know. And I passed this around. I threw it by Mary Jo. I threw it by Brad. And, you know, I ended up not writing a post about it. So when he talked about announcing another product, I was like, okay, well, this is going to be the thing I was talking about. But then he was talking about this laptop, and I knew it was a detachable, and I thought, well, that's not quite the same thing. But there were a couple of things in the first video where it kind of made me a little confused because I knew there was a GPU in the base, and when they showed the GPU inside the machine, it was clearly in the base. And I thought, well, of course it would be on a laptop, right? You know, it wouldn't be in a screen. I mean, maybe that's not that weird, but there were a couple of little hints that this was kind of different in that first video, if you really were paying attention. But by the end of it, I was like, okay, I guess my source was wrong. You know, this is just
a laptop.
They threw people off, whatever. But
I think to justify the price also for them, they kind of had to make it something else. I thought it was just going to be a convertible. I didn't, when I first saw it, I'm like, okay, well, I see it bends, you know, the hinge. Yeah. So I thought it was just going to recline and become a convertible into touchscreen.
You know, I need to really play with this thing, but the hinge is still a little weird to me. I think that the thing that they got right about it is a lot of people, if you think about a traditional convertible where you kind of keep putting the screen back and it goes all the way back around and then you can use it like a tablet or you can use it with the screen kind of propped up. The keyboard's on the bottom and it's hitting the table and people don't like that. And there are real problems with that kind of design. You know, the keys can become scuffed, they can break off.
Yeah.
You know, things can happen. And so I know, I think it was, I want to get this right. One of the I can't remember who it was. I think it was either Lenovo or HP. It must have been Lenovo. They have a retracting keyboard on one new model, which, you know, kind of solves that problem. But the way that Microsoft solves it is to just let you pop off the screen, flip it around, and put it on backwards. And so when you curl it around like it's a tablet, or use it in kind of a, you know, I don't know what you call it, like a stand mode or whatever, kiosk mode. The keyboard is never upside down. The keyboard is always up, you know? And I actually think that's really important. And so that gap in some ways, Microsoft told me it was about the nature of the hinge, that there would have to be that gap and that it posed no problems, yada, yada, yada. But yeah. I think part of it might have to do with the keyboard too. I mean, it never touches down on the keyboard.
Yeah, so
when it's reversed.
Yeah. Okay, so a couple things here. One, I'm looking beyond this device. Did you get my message, by the way?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome. a couple things here. One, Microsoft now has the tablet, which is the Surface. They have their laptop, which is the Surface Book. Does this hint at an entire line of Surface devices, meaning I have a whole theory about the phone. I do think we're going to get a phone, and I do think it's going to be an Intel-based chip, and that's why it's going to be called a Surface. That's my theory on this. And I know that we've had a couple discussions about stuff like
reasonable.
This.
Reasonable.
Yeah. So they're probably waiting for that. But do we see a non-touch version of this coming into the market?
I don't think so, because part of the point of Surface is to, as they say, bring Windows to life, right? And I think a big part of the modern Windows, whether you're talking about Windows 8, 8.1, or 10 in its respective time period, is touch. I mean, I think touch and pen, in other words, there are other companies building lower cost, lower end machines that don't expose all of the features of Windows. Microsoft's devices are not going to be those devices. And so, for the Windows 10 timeframe, obviously that means Windows Hello in some capacity. And that explains the camera and the Surface Pro 4. It explains the optional version of the type cover now for Surface Pro 3 that has a fingerprint reader. But it also means touch and it means pen. And even their lowest end Surface, Surface 3, supports that pen to the literal same level of, exactness and so forth. It's the pen is the same. It's not like a cheaper version of the pen. It's the same pen. I think it's more likely that what we're going to see is, as Panos Panay has more experience with the phone stuff and, he took over that part of the company, that I don't know that they'll use Surface branding or whatever. They'll probably make that decision based on the, what the devices are like and whatever. Yeah. You mentioned like an Intel chip, that could be part of it. But I'm not sure that Intel is what makes a Surface, because, of course, we had ARM Surface devices too.
I
think it's more exposing all of the possible features that are available in whatever version of Windows it's running, and that there is a certain kind of design precision to Surface. They take immaculate care in the build and construction and quality of these products. And the current Lumia devices, were designed by different people. It's a different team. That's changing. Those two teams are coming together. That's going to be different next time.
I think with Continuum is where an Intel, because someone said, well, why have a Surface branded phone if you have the Lumia lines? Well, but the way that I see it is that the Surface brand of phones would be the one with true Continuum, where it's not, because the desktop is still true Continuum, meaning you can run desktop applications on this phone.
Maybe. I still think phone is going to be restricted to Windows Store acquired apps. That doesn't just mean universal apps. So sometime in the next quarter, I don't remember exactly when this is going to debut, but they've talked about it, this notion that they're going to allow software developers to wrap desktop apps in these kind of virtualized packages and deploy them through the store. And so let's pretend that Adobe Reader is one of those things. Like Adobe Reader is a desktop application today, but if you package it as what is essentially like an app v container, you put it in the store, you let people download it for free from the store. You get all the benefits of a store app or like a universal app, right? It's a simple installer, simple uninstall, right click on install. It's sandboxed from the rest of the system. There aren't DLLs all over the place. It's all self-contained. And theoretically, an app could run on an Intel phone if there were such a thing. There aren't.
Are they just porting it over? They're wrapping it in, I guess.
They're not porting it. This technology exists today. So Microsoft has a tool for enterprises called Application Virtualization, app-v, like app-v. They're using that technology to package, whatever the terminology is. Basically, what you're doing is you're taking a Win32 app and you're making it in, you're putting it in a self-contained package that can be deployed in a single step to a desktop computer or whatever.
Okay. And it's going to run as a modern UI,
No UI change. It's still a desktop app. But the point is, it provides the benefits of a store app because it's not spewing DLLs all over the place. It's completely self-contained.
Okay.
It's a virtual application.
Okay, so I guess
the application thinks its DLLs are all over the place, like they would be on a normal install, but it's not. It's faking out the application.
Okay.
And it just gives you the benefits of reliability and security. This thing can't infect the system if it's got a virus in it. It's self-contained. It can't get into the system.
Do you think that's the future of desktop applications on all of Windows?
Yeah, this is our transition away from desktop applications. Yeah. I think the future of desktop applications is they go away. But before that can happen, this has to happen. This is the transition.
Let's say Skype. Skype is their product. I'm trying to think of an application that would benefit from this.
It's not about benefiting an application. It's about benefiting the user. There's no actual benefit to the application. Right?
The benefit is being in that app store and being self-contained. Right?
The benefit to the developer is the world is moving away from these styles of apps, these kind of complex, hard to install, hard, sometimes impossible to uninstall. Applications that can be infected by other applications on the system, applications that can, in fact, affect other applications or the operating system. What this is you have I'm using Adobe Reader because that's not really a great example, but let's just say you have Adobe Reader. You as Adobe have no desire to ever make, I shouldn't say it that way. You don't want to start over from scratch and make a new modern universal app for Windows because it's so complex. You have years of development. It just doesn't make sense to do that. And this gives you a way to package this thing up so that you can still deploy it in a sense. And if you have people on really simple devices like a tablet or something, they can run your app and the experience is super easy for them.
Number one,
I don't feel like I'm explaining this properly.
Okay, let's talk about Photoshop.
Right.
Would Adobe want to do that with Photoshop?
So, right. I mean, the problem is, yes, and here's why. Okay. And actually, the phone is where it makes sense. So,
And that's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about right. for the phone because
but we're talking completely theoretically here.
Yeah.
So for example, we don't know that this is happening. We have to just kind of pretend. Like, what do I sort of see this looking pretend. Like, right?
And we're talking about
phone, let's call it a Surface phone. It runs on an Intel chip, right? It has like 4 gigs of RAM and lots of storage and whatever. It's based on Intel, so you can put Photoshop on it. But it's a Windows phone, so Microsoft's not going to let you install apps to it like you do on a PC. You can't just go to the web and go to the Adobe installer and write. That's not how it's going to work. They're still going to restrict application installs. So you as Adobe put it into the Windows Store. You package it up as an app V package or whatever they're going to call it for the Windows Store. And that makes it available to people on mobile. But here's the thing. You're still not going to run it on the tiny screen. In fact, I fully expect that some of those apps will literally not let you run them on the screen. It will pop up something that says you have to use this on an external screen.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because once you connect it to a Continuum dock of any kind and you have a keyboard and a mouse and a big screen, you run it from the screen, right, because it has its own version of the start screen, a start menu in this case. And when you launch it there, Photoshop runs full screen. And now it makes sense, right? This can't work on Windows phones today because those Windows phones they just announced and all the other ones we know about run on ARM. And the ARM to Intel conversion is not happening. This is not what this is about. This is why this is also theoretical.
And by the way, we're using, someone said, a lot of these applications that we're probably talking about are available via apps. But we're talking about, this hypothetical Continuum setup where I think, why wouldn't they allow you to run, if it's an Intel chipset, when you connect via Continuum, why wouldn't they allow you to run desktop applications the way that they are right now? Why can't I just go to, the web and download Skype, from Skype?
Because it's still a controlled environment. Like the phone is never going to be the Wild West of the Windows desktop. They're literally trying to go away from this. Even on a tablet, you could make the argument that Adobe might want to say, if you're running like a 7-inch or 8-inch tablet, Adobe might want it to pop up and say, you need to be attached to something else to use this. There's no reason you couldn't use a little tablet with a Continuum dock and then connect it to all the stuff and have a full, full Photoshop. And that would make some sense, maybe. I mean, of course, the problem with these little devices is that the processors are lousy. There isn't a lot of RAM necessarily.
Do I see people taking their phones right now and plugging it via the dock and then running Photoshop on it? No, I don't think that's something that's really going to happen too often, if it does happen at all. But
the use case for someone who absolutely has to run Photoshop, and does not want a laptop computer or whatever
is insane. Yeah.
Is non-existent. Yeah. I mean, so then that actually leads us to an interesting question, which is like, why? What's the point? And the point is actually, there's probably many points, but one of them is going to be businesses, right? There are a lot of businesses that are stuck on some old application that, you know, it's never been updated. It's never going to be updated. We have to run it. They could package this thing up. There's an enterprise version of the store. They could package this out and put it out to their employees. And they're, like we've been talking about, there are people who get most work done on a phone. And they can attach to a screen and get work done on that one app. And they can detach from the screen and go on with their life. I mean, it might be a way to move people forward, you know. Applications like you know, Chrome, iTunes, Photoshop are big and heavy and complex, and in some cases expensive, but they're not really logical candidates for this treatment because, well, A, these are all big companies that could make modern versions of these apps if they want to. They just don't want to. Those apps don't necessarily make a lot of sense on a phone, although you could make a case for, you know, at least for Chrome, certainly. I really think this is about backwards compatibility and just moving people forward. This is an interim step. Microsoft really does think that the future of applications on Windows are universal apps, right, which will work across platforms. It's what they want. You know, Win32 apps are the past. I mean, they're present, but they're, you know, we're trying to get rid of this stuff, you know, because they're not sophisticated. They're not secure. They're not reliable. They're potentially dangerous.
Well, and now with floating apps, there's no, if you're a developer, there's way more of a reason for you to start developing, you know, those type of applications and rather than doing Win32 apps.
Yeah. I mean, if you were going to start from scratch, you wouldn't write a Win32 app.
No, I mean, you don't have to. Other than, you know,
it is a chicken egg thing. Obviously there's 110 million people running Windows 10. There are probably 500 million people running Windows 7 and, you know, 1-something billion people running previous versions of Windows that can't run modern universal apps. And so, you know, you have to kind of deal with that aspect. We're at the beginning of a transition here, you know, and I think Continuum and this app packaging thing, I can't remember what they call it, you know, what App V for lack of a better term, is really just a step to get, you know, to kind of move us to the future. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the many. I don't know if you've gotten, you know, to play around with this device yet. Mm-hmm. So I'll save that. I won't go
Which
into
one?
It. Have you played with the Surface?
Oh yeah,
Surface Book. The Surface
Book. I've used all the new hardware.
Okay. How did you like the keyboard?
On which one?
The Surface Pro. Not Surface,
the Surface
Book.
Pro.
Surface Book. Book, I'm sorry.
The Surface Book.
Yeah.
I mean, the Surface Book is by all accounts a laptop. You know, I think that's the interesting thing about it. In fact, you know, it's kind of weird. Like, I've used a lot of 2-in-1s, and a lot of times these things are very top-heavy devices, right, because it's a tablet with a base. And there has to be some way to detach it, right? And the way that works on Surface Book is kind of interesting because there's just a key on the keyboard, and you can use an on-screen thing too. If you weren't looking really close, I mean, there's nothing to indicate that this thing's a 2-in-1. I mean, it works, you know, it's a laptop. I mean, it's just, that's how it is. And so the keyboard is much better than any keyboard Microsoft has put on a Surface. It's a real high quality, nice laptop keyboard, and it has a large glass trackpad. It's even bigger than the one on Surface Pro 4 type cover. In fact, it's much bigger. It's a great laptop, and I really like the 3.2 aspect ratio. It's got kind of a tall look to it. You get very used to these kind of widescreen displays. This thing's more square, which is how, you know, laptops sort of used to look back in the day. It's great. That one's really good.
Trackpad, Paul. What about it? Tell me.
It's great. It's glass. It's wonderful. I've only had that day, but the couple of gestures I was able to do, you know, a 2-finger scroll, very common. If you do a 3-finger up down gesture, it does I think it's like a task view kind of a thing where you can switch between apps, you know, and that type of thing is very Mac like, you know, like different numbers of, you know, fingers on the trackpad do different things. But it seems good. You know, I've never, with the exception of the Mac, and I still have to kind of hand, you know, bend, you know, before Apple and genuflect or whatever, but their trackpad on the MacBooks, MacBook Air, MacBook Pro is second to none. I like the finger, you know, the kind of nubbin style point you see on ThinkPads better than anything. But as far as pure trackpads go, I mean, Apple's still the standard. And so I don't think the Surface Pro 4 trackpad is going to stand up.
So, I mean, that brings up a good question. Why hasn't anybody matched Apple's trackpad?
I don't know. It seems like it's a
common sense thing to try to attempt where, you know, if you've ever used a MacBook Pro or any kind of MacBook, you know how good and fluid this trackpad is. Why wouldn't, you know, almost every PC manufacturer, especially on their higher end device, say, you know what, that's what we need to do. We need to do this on all these laptops.
I think this is the dark side of the PC world. I mean, HP, Dell, Lenovo, Lenovo might be the exception. Most companies don't make this stuff themselves, right? They use a Synaptics piece. They use there's a couple of big trackpad makers, and those guys have their own software, and they kind of install the hardware into their own hardware, and they interact with the system, and it just hasn't historically worked. I mean, there were really good trackpads that have come out this year. The HP version on the Envy, the Spectre X360 is very, very good. Not the Dell XPS 13, but the new version, the XPS 15, is very, very good, although I've not experienced that myself. And Surface Book, we'll have to see. Maybe. You know, that might be the one. I mean, Microsoft would be the company to pull this off.
Yeah,
I'm not sure yet. I just haven't had enough time. So
And the other problem is on the PC side, you know, since Synaptic is making it, you could have five different PCs in all different price ranges, and guess what? They could all have the same trackpad. That's a problem. That's a major problem.
Oh, by the way, the new MacBook doesn't have the same trackpad.
No.
So even Apple can screw it up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's possible. So let's talk about the phones for a couple minutes, Paul.
Yep.
950, 950 XL. What do you think?
So obviously all of the details about these devices was leaked ahead of time.
Months
Everything.
Ago. Yeah.
And it kind of stinks. But I guess the thing that wasn't leaked and the thing that you really wouldn't see from like a render, which I think was what most of those pictures really were. I don't think they were photographs. I think they were mostly renders. Is how kind of nice they are in the hand. Like I had this experience last year, a year ago, August, I saw the Lumia 735 and the Lumia 830 for the first time. And when he handed me I think it was the 735, but it's probably pretty true of both of them. Whichever one, it doesn't really matter. But anyway, he handed me one of the phones, and it was so light, you kind of, you know, your hand almost lifted up as he put it on your hand because you expect it to be heavy, and it wasn't. And I said, well, this thing is clearly an engineering sample. I mean, do you have a version, you know, with the battery and everything in it? And he said, no, this is turn it on. This is the real thing. And it's kind of interesting.
I don't know what happened there.
That was a good grab.
I don't know. This is it. This is the question right here.
Yep.
There you go.
It's kind of amazing how light they are, you know. So that's the first reaction. First of all, so these devices are super thin, really nicely thin. The camera bump stuff that people were kind of complaining about are not obnoxious looking in the slightest. They're not protruding like half an inch out of the back or anything. There's nothing going on there. And they're so light. Both of them, you know, for their size. I held the 950 XL in an iPhone 6S Plus side by side. I mean, it felt like it was half as heavy. And that's obviously not what it really is, but that's the net effect, you know. And there's a weird density that can occur with mobile devices. I used to always talk about how, like, the Lumia 920 was really dense, you know, beyond its size. Like, the weight was more than it should have been given its size. It just felt dense, like a brick. And this thing, the 950 XL,
is the opposite.
Made the iPhone feel like a brick.
Wow.
Yeah, really different.
Did it feel like, I know the feel, like, and do you think that concept where everybody was saying how it looked cheap and it wasn't a flagship device, has that gone away at this point? Have those people
It's
just
gone
stopped?
Away by anyone who has seen them.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're not cheap. But the other thing that's neat about them is because you can take off the back, you can put on backs. And you can put them backs that have different materials on them, right?
Oh, you can do leather, you can do all different types, yeah.
You could, there were some third-party backs at the show. And so there's the potential for companies to come out with, you know, new shells or whatever you want to call that for the back. So you could have like a wood back, a leather back, you know, different color backs, different grips, different whatever. And I think that kind of thing is actually really nice.
You know, it's the little things, right? I mean, the fact that you could customize it, you could do all that. They go a long
way. We'll
especially
see how
for
that,
Motorola.
You know,
I mean, Motorola's done.
Whatever. The device itself is really nice by itself.
So should we say goodbye to Verizon? We'll never see them again?
Yeah, no, I've been talking about that for months. I'm really confused by how people still don't get that Verizon is gone. That if you're a Windows phone fan, forget Verizon. It's never happening. Back in July, I was told point blank, Microsoft is not working with those carriers that screwed them over before. They can't afford to. It's a small market. We can only work with carriers that really worked with us. And in the United States, that's AT&T, and that's it. And so it's not about animosity. It's just they don't have the time, the effort. There's no point in courting AT&T only or Verizon only to have them wait 9 months before they ship a freaking phone.
Never
update it.
Well, what's amazing to me is that Verizon, all these years, they have still not bent on the way that they treat the phone manufacturers and the phone company, you know, the HTCs and the Samsungs and the Microsofts and the Apples. Apple and Samsung are the exception here. But
they sell millions of phones.
Yeah,
it doesn't
they don't
matter.
Care. They don't care. That's what it is.
They don't care about Microsoft. They're never going to. So just stop worrying about it. You can buy these things directly from Microsoft. They work multi-band. GSM obviously is going to be where you have to be. So it's going to be T-Mobile, AT&T in the United States, but they'll be international. They'll be carry unlocked. Get them right from Microsoft. That's the way to buy them. Even if you're on AT&T, you should buy it from Microsoft. Don't buy it from AT&T.
Well, there was another phone that was announced also very, very quickly.
In December. Blink and you miss it.
Yeah. Well, how much was it?
140, 130, 140.
So what's the story with that? Just everything but lower end?
It's a 4.7-inch device, Snapdragon 210. 8 gigs of storage. It's probably 1 gig of RAM.
Snapdragon 210.
210.
Yeah, it's a slow processor.
It's a low-end phone. Yeah. 5-megapixel camera. We're not talking about anything great. But, you know, again, this is the successor to the Lumia 5. I'm forgetting the numbers now. 520, 525, 530, which was a piece of junk. Yeah. 635. It's that phone. And on that level, this is probably a pretty good phone. And, you know, again, it's a throwaway amount of money. Anyone can afford it.
You want to try out a Windows phone, this is the way to do it.
That will be the new one. And by the way, I should say it's going to debut
December.
And only in Europe.
Really?
At first.
They didn't mention that.
I know. It's true.
That's interesting. They did not mention that.
It will be around.
Overall, it was a very strong lineup from Microsoft.
Yeah.
Were you surprised that we didn't see anything about Windows 10, about the build? The new build that's going to be coming out?
Yeah, I had expected them to talk about
Threshold 2, Wave 2.
Well, you know, this notion that when these Windows phones are going to come with Windows 10 Mobile, what's going on there? They didn't talk about that at all. Will Surface Pro 4 Surface Book come with this Threshold 2 release? It doesn't appear so. And I think if you were to ask Microsoft about this, they would just say that doesn't matter because Windows 10 just gets updated. And when Threshold 2, which they're not going to call it that, it comes out, we're just going to deliver it to everybody. It doesn't matter.
But honestly,
I think they were released.
But we didn't.
I think that was the plan originally. I'm not sure what they're doing there.
But for me, we didn't even see the fact that, you know, any kind of information about it. They didn't say like these are the changes that we're implementing.
Okay. So I'll play the Microsoft PR role and say it was a hardware show.
Yeah. Well.
No, I'm just saying it was a hardware show.
I guess
Windows 10. What more do you need to know?
Yeah, Windows 10 is Windows 10. So what if we upgrade this and upgrade that? Overall, I thought it was a good show. I thought it was a great show. Out of all the things, right, that you saw, was the book the biggest surprise for you, even though you kind of knew?
I'm confronted with the kind of details I had about it. It wasn't quite what I expected. The hinge was, weird. I was also very happy and surprised by the Surface Dock, which I think solves a lot of problems and is the right way to do docking.
It's a little too pricey, though.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Not the Surface Dock. I thought you meant the Continuum thing.
Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah, that doc.
There was no surprise there. I mean, they've been, everyone's so excited about Continuum. It's like a feature no one's ever going to use for anything. And it's not going to sell any phones. And it's just the same demo over and over again. We get it. It runs Word and Excel.
Well, I don't know what I'm tired about hearing more. Continuum or HoloLens? That HoloLens demo.
The HoloLens lie.
Yeah. You're shooting things in your living room.
Yeah.
It's the year 2020, apparently, in the world of Microsoft. We're 5 years away from that happening. 5 years away. Yeah, I guess 2020 is not that far away. 4 years away. That's crazy to think that. We're in the future, yep. Paul. We're still docking
2020 is my
things.
Target.
For what?
That's when my daughter graduates from high school and I can start living somewhere else.
You're out of here. You're going to like Belize. Yep. Still live on an island somewhere. Forget about computers.
Yep.
Totally disconnect from everything. I really like the laptop. I'm really, really interested in version two of this thing.
Yeah, I am too.
And, what feedback they receive and what changes they make to it. Because I don't think version 2... I think version 2 will probably be very different.
Yeah, I talked to him about the hinge and I said, you know, you guys are such sticklers for perfection and engineering prowess and everything. I mean, that gap has got to really bother you. And they were like, no, not really. And, you know, they sort of said it was dictated by the nature of the hinge and yada, yada. I firmly believe next year that thing will be flat. I have no doubt about it, you know.
it's almost like they got like a box of hinges and they're like, well, we got to use these.
Yeah.
We got to use these.
I mean, they custom designed this thing. It's their own thing. And honestly, you know, what's his face? Panos Panay said something really interesting that's absolutely true.
Why?
And I think he said it with regards to the keyboard and the Surface Book. He said, you know, we've been making keyboards at Microsoft for 25 years. This is not new for us, you know. We know how to get this right. And I was like, okay, you know, that's fair. I mean, I use an ergonomic Microsoft keyboard I have for almost 20 years.
Yeah.
I rely on these things, you know. The keyboard on the Surfaces to date has not been good for me. I mean, remember the first one, the first couple, you could buy like a touch cover or whatever they called it, you know, that was just a flat, you know, cover that had keys on, like, I mean, it was ludicrous. So
they've gotten better.
Surface Book is the real deal.
For the Surface Pro, I want a mechanical, like an old school mechanical keyboard. For
yeah,
it.
Like a clackety clack. Like
yeah, but I want it from Microsoft. Like I want it to attach to it, just like I was supposed to, and just use it that way. Just type like this. Got to push down really hard on it. No, I thought it was great. I thought it was a great announcement. I thought it was a great show. I'm hoping these products do well because it's really going to dictate the future of where they go with their hardware line.
Yeah.
You know, this is the best Surface yet. I mean, that's the reality of it. And apparently they're doing something really good because if you look at what Dell is putting out, what Lenovo's putting out, what all these other OEMs are doing, they're copying the Surface, which is exactly what Microsoft wants them to
do.
Don't
forget Apple.
Apple, yeah. Apple
also copying the Surface.
I mean. This is what Microsoft wants. This is the reference point. This is the device that all these manufacturers should be creating. You don't have to create it as good as Microsoft is doing, but you should attempt to come close and attempt to do better.
Remember, you know, one of the big debates just a couple of weeks ago was, you know, HP, Dell. Well, Dell's reselling Dell and HP are reselling the service too, but Dell, HP,
the XPS
Lenovo,
12. The XPS 12.
Companies are just ripping off Surface. So now that they've finally bought into this, you know, type of form factor, is there any reason for Microsoft to keep making Surface? You know, and now you look at what they did, and you're like, okay, like you know, they've kind of moved on. I mean, I think they're refining the classic design of Surface Pro, right? Surface Pro 4. You can kind of look at Surface Pro 2 and Surface Pro 4 as Microsoft's S devices to kind of put it into Apple lingo, where it's based on the previous design, but it's refined. And so we're not talking about a revolutionary new design. We'll see how that changes if it does next year. Which, by the way, it could change a lot now because of that dock. The biggest problem going from Surface Pro 3 to Surface Pro 4 was this stupid dock they had to build it to, right?
Well, The Verge Tom Warren posted an article on The Verge. He says everyone is copying Microsoft Surface. So, and he actually has a whole list of all these products here. I mean, this looks like a Surface to me.
Yeah.
You know, you look at that quickly, you're like, oh, that's a Surface.
Yep. So I mean, some of them are really bad, you know.
Yeah.
The Lenovo one in particular is an insane.
That's the one. This one.
With a kickstand.
Even with the kickstand.
This is the keyboard. I mean, by the way, look at that keyboard. So that's a lot like the type cover for the Surface Pro 4, right?
Yeah. And you know what? Look at this. This is the Google one.
Yeah, Google, Apple. They're all doing it. The thing is, you know, when Surface first came out, Microsoft's competitors, not PC makers, but companies like Google and Apple made fun of Surface. Microsoft's partners were openly hostile to Surface. In fact, I arguably Surface is the reason why every PC maker makes a Chromebook, was just to get back at Microsoft, you know, a little bit of childhood style revenge, you know. So anyway, we'll see. You know, the Surface Pro 5, you know, it's obviously not too early to start thinking ahead.
No, it's...
Maybe they change things up now that they can because the dock has changed. But now they're going in a different direction too. You know, and obviously they're looking at all kinds of different device types. For some reason, they felt like the laptop was the thing that they could innovate on. And they're attacking the high end of the market. So they're not taking anything away from anybody. We'll see how it goes.
Paul, did you see the XPS 15? It came out, the new one.
Mm-hmm.
It looks great.
Yeah, I don't like the XPS 13. I'm a little confused why everyone's so gaga over it. But the XPS 15 is really interesting to me because it's got that gorgeous big screen. So we'll see. That one I'm very interested in.
And they also have the XPS 12, which is a Surface.
Stupid little tablet thing.
You don't like it? I don't.
No, I don't like it. That's too small. Those things are too small. Those are toys.
Looking at the XPS 15. So I priced this out earlier. I was at almost $2,000. Same. I mean, it's you know, getting a Mac. And it's not, by the way, it is not touchscreen. The XPS 15.
What is it?
XPS 15. It is not touch.
Yeah, I don't care about that.
Okay.
You know, by the way, that's another thing about the Surface Book that I don't think a lot of people understand. It's what Microsoft calls like an 80-20 device. And what they mean by that is 80% of the time you're going to be using it as a laptop. You're not going to be touching it. You're not going to be using it as a laptop. As a tablet. For me, it's more like 95-5. I mean, I don't think even, you know, most of my devices now are touch-based. But the truth is I don't really touch the screen a lot. And I certainly don't pop off the screen when I can and use it as a tablet very much at all, whether it's a Surface or anything else. On the Surface Book, that usage is sort of enforced by the hardware because not only do you not get that GPU if you're not plugged into the base, if you have one, you also don't get 75% of the battery. Most of the battery is in the base. So when you unplug that thing, it's only good for 3 hours. This is not a tablet that can turn into a laptop. It's a laptop. And you can sometimes use it as a tablet for a little while. But it's not designed to be used like you're going to be riding it on all day long or whatever. If you're going to be doing that, you want to get a Surface Pro 4. It's not the same device.
Okay, so I got a question for you. The battery that's in the tablet portion, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're using it, is it using both batteries?
Yeah, if you're plugged in.
No, you're not plugged in. Yeah, I mean, you're docked, obviously. Okay, yeah, but you're not. You're walking around with this
laptop.
Yeah,
if you've ever used Windows with like a... I don't have it here. I mean, actually, this one doesn't have battery anyway. I can't look at it. So if you ever use Windows with a system that has two batteries and you click on the little power icon that you see down in the tray, it will actually show you both of them and it will show you how much each one is, you know.
Yeah. And I guess that's why they're able to get, you know, so many hours of battery life. What were they saying? 12 hours of battery life? I mean, obviously, then, you're
yeah, 12 hour rate. Yeah.
I don't know if that's a real world situation, but I mean, that's
it's
still.
Not. Yeah. I'll just, you know, there's no way. But by the way, 9-10 hours, I think, is reasonable.
Yeah.
The Surface Pro 3 was rated at 9 hours, which the Surface Pro 4 is also rated at. And the real world usage was somewhere in the 6.5 to 7 range. So I'm thinking Surface Book is, you know, 9, 10, somewhere in there.
Are they losing space? You know, why wouldn't it be tremendous? Why wouldn't they get even more, you know, battery life, considering this is attachable and it's a regular tablet?
So two reasons.
Okay.
If you put more battery in the top, it becomes top heavy and it will topple over. That's one of the things they want. It's one of the reasons why the hinge doesn't go back all the way. If you think about it, if you put the screen back too far, it would just, you know, go flying over. The other one is by not having too much battery in the top, you know, the tablet, they allow that thing to be thinner than it would be otherwise. And you want it to be as thin as possible because it's a screen of a laptop, right? It's not quite as, you know, it's, I can't grab stuff from here, but you know, if you think about a typical, like a real ultrabook, the screen part, you know, the screen, the top part that where the screen is very thin. It's like really, it's like wafer thin. This is not like that. It's like a small, It's like a thin surface tablet, but it's thinner than any surface, but it's still thicker than any Ultrabook screen. So it's kind of the compromise, you know?
Yeah.
But again, it's a laptop. It's not like a laptop first, then a tablet. It's a laptop that can sometimes be used as a tablet. It's not, it's a different kind of equation.
I mean, it's a very interesting device, and I'm hopeful that it'll do well. So they further innovate this thing.
Yeah.
I just don't want this to be like a big flop and I'm like, all right, yeah, you know what? It didn't work out for us, but now they're in it. So now they got to go, they got to do it.
It looks great to me. And I have to say, by the way, this is another example of when they were showing it off on screen and on stage from the audience, I thought, you know, I was like, it's a little awkward looking, you know, I don't know. But when you go afterwards and you play with it and you put your hands on it, you pick it up and turn it around in your hands and everything. Okay, actually, this is nice. And the phones were like that, right? You see pictures of me like, eh, whatever, it's generic looking phones.
See,
whatever.
I didn't feel that way about the phone when I saw it. I didn't feel like it was crappy.
A lot of people were complaining, you know, that they were cheap.
Well, I felt like I was missing out on something and I wasn't seeing it because people were like, oh my God, this thing is hideous. It's a mid-range phone. It just, I mean, it's all plastic and it's all I didn't feel that way about it.
This. The Nexus 5X and 6P, whatever they're called, when we saw renders and photos of them, everyone, and myself included, was kind of freaking out about the camera bump, especially in the 6-inch version. It looked horrible, right? It looked like there was some giant knob sticking off the back of the phone. But when Google actually announces those phones and you see the real thing, you're like, actually, that's not objectionable at all. There's something, you know, you can film things or draw things in a certain way. It just makes it look bad. But sometimes those things in person are fine. You know, they're fine. And I think those new Nexus devices fall into this category. I think the new Windows phone, the Lumias, fall into this category. And I think the Surface Book also falls into this category.
Very cool. Very, very cool. I think we touched on everything, Paul. all the devices.
Hooray.
Yeah, hooray. And I'm sure over the next couple of weeks, we're going to have more stuff happening. When is Threshold Wave 2 coming out?
Supposed to be October originally, but I'm hearing November now.
Yeah, so. It's supposed to be like now, right? The next like week or so.
Yeah, but it's not. That's not happening.
Okay. We're coming up to that. There's a lot happening, guys. So keep watching. Of course, if you want to, we're going to continue doing our bonus show right after this. So if you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to talk about the event in New York, Paul's trip, everything else that happened. If you are listening to the podcast, you could always watch it. Patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us whatever you want to fund us. And it's all there. You could also, if you want to help out the GFQ network, use our Amazon link, gfq.co/Amazon. That's gfq.co/Amazon. The holidays are coming up, so whenever you buy something on Amazon, use that link, bookmark it, click on it, and we get a tiny little credit from every sale. You can follow Paul on Twitter, at The Rot. You can follow me, at Andrew Zarian. We're everywhere podcasts are available, so subscribe to us. Subscribe. We're on YouTube. We're everywhere. So you can watch it on therot.com. And that's it, guys. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye for now.